This is Pac-12 football.
The quick slant is picked off. It's Demaryius Randall, and he will take it to the house for an Arizona State touchdown.
And they give it to the linebacker, Jack, and he gets another first down. And here he goes, Miles Jack. How about that?
Heisman hopefuls.
Mariota with time over the middle.
Hundley looking for another block. He's not going to need it. That is an 86-yard touchdown run.
The Conference of Champions brings you the Pac-12 Network's football podcast. Here are your hosts, Mike Yam and Rick Neuheisel.
Oh, yes. Another edition of the Pac-12 Network's football podcast. The one and only Rick Neuheisel, Mike Yam with you. And we thought, because we're post-draft now, which means that there is plenty to talk about with a lot of Pac-12 players that we will no longer be able to watch on Pac-12 football fields. We thought we would bring in our first rounder, Curtis Conway, in the saddle, who actually...
Seaway in the house!
Seaway, you were a major part of NFL Network's draft coverage, so mm-hmm. You are loaded up with a wealth of knowledge for today's show.
Yeah, just a little bit, though. I think I've tried my best to forget it all. Man, I was getting headaches thinking about the draft, man, going over all these players, but it was a great experience, man. You get a chance to look at some of these kids that you hadn't really watched and compare them to some of the guys in the Pac-12 who, you know, I watch every Saturday. So it was definitely a great experience.
Well, Seaway, I want to get, because from both of your standpoints, it's unique, because Seaway, you were drafted in the first round. Rick, you've had a ton of players.
Rick,
that you were
not.
You were. I'm giving you your due credit, though. You've had a ton of players that you have seen, that you have coached, drafted in the first round. So each one of you guys, I want you to just give me a sense of what it was like for you, Curtis, to be drafted. And Rick, what's it like for the coach to watch their players that they've invested this time, 3- and 4-year athletes that all of a sudden are going to be playing on Sundays?
Well, for myself, it was a great experience. I didn't go to New York, and I chose not to because I wanted to spend that time with the family, you know. And, you know, you saw a few guys. I think Anthony Barr, he stayed at home. It's one of those situations where it's a dream come true, and it's a surreal situation because you hear about it, you see it on TV, you go through this whole process of going to the combine and interviews, and you're hearing mock draft. I mean, you're looking at mock drafts, and you're hearing people say where they think you're going to go. And all of a sudden, you know, a team out of nowhere comes out and they draft you. And that was kind of my experience. You know, I thought I was going to San Diego or the Raiders. I heard the Chargers all week, they were on the radio talking about trying to get me. And at that time, I was scheduled to go top 15. Well, the Chargers, I think they were like 20, and they were talking about trading up to get me. So, and I was pumped because I really wanted to go and play in San Diego. And all of a sudden, draft day comes around, and I'm sitting around, and my phone rings with the 7th pick, and it was the Chicago Bears. And I took one trip to Chicago. So that's just the mindset of a player. I mean, I tell you, it's stressful. It's exciting at the same time, but it's stressful.
As a coach, it's like the same feeling a parent has. You just got a great amount of pride for the young man getting that kind of opportunity. Certainly Anthony Barr this year getting selected with the 9th pick to go to Minnesota. I had some conversations with some of the people I know in the Viking organization a couple days prior to the draft, which alerted me that they were really considering it. And, you know, just you beam for – because I knew Anthony when he was at Loyola High School. And, you know, all the hopes and aspirations that he had at that time, believing he was an offensive football player, his mom believing he was an offensive football player, making the transition, and then obviously coming onto the scene as well as he had in the last couple of years in Jim Mora's defense. Just a fabulous job. And so thrilled for him. Xavier Suafilo was the first guy taken in the second round. Another great story. A guy, you know, came to us from Provo, Utah, was a first starter from day one as our left tackle, goes on a LDS mission because that was something that was important to him. And, you know, just one of those model citizens that, you know, just thrilled that he gets that opportunity. And a year ago, Dayton Jones, I've told the story about Dayton and his commitment to doing everything to get to college, just to get to college, be the first member of his family to get a degree. And to, you know, where people say, and SAT scores might say that you're not going to be successful, Dayton didn't want to hear it. You know, he was absolutely committed to showing that he was capable of that, and so you're thrilled for those guys that find a way to overcome and get to the precipice of the game of football. And hopefully they can play for a long time, because it's certainly a life-changing event if you can, and you do sound things with the money that you're able to earn. But, yeah, you're just like a parent. You're thrilled.
A lot of great stories in this draft. In fact, a couple first-round picks, Anthony Barr, Brandon Cooks, Dan Buchanan, all three of those guys you will hear from. There will be more analysis on Pac-12 Football Weekly Wednesday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Multiple re-airs.
And it's always interesting to see how the Chris Seaway, that's one of our things, by the way.
I thought it was Living Color. Pick it up.
Yeah, pick it up. Pick it up. by the way, speaking of In Living Color, you know, I my mom, it was her 50th birthday years ago, and we threw a 50th birthday for her. So I did like a roast for her, and she let me watch In Living Color when I was really young, and I would laugh at the jokes. My mom would say to me, do you get it? And I basically would say no, but it was still funny because you're a kid and you're watching. Now that I'm older and I'm watching these things, I've actually questioned the supervision that my parents were I mean, this is a highly inappropriate show for a child to really witness, and I think that's probably what makes this.
Is that
transition.
Why you call her 2 and 3 times a day just to complain about the rearing?
No, I was going to say it's actually place. Helped me on this job because of all the jokes that I take from you, Rick. That the transition is a smooth one. So I call my mom 3 and 4 times a day to thank her for allowing me to take all the verbal abuse that you disseminate my way. As I mentioned, Anthony Barr, Brandon Cooks, and Dan Buchanan, we will hear from those guys and what it is like now to be a first round pick. I had mentioned earlier, Seaway, that you know what it's like. You told us a story of what it was like to be a first round pick. You were also part of the NFL Network's draft coverage. Mm-hmm. The two of you guys in particular have been a champion for the Pac-12 and have explained that nationally, maybe these guys don't get this due credit. A very, I think a cool thing that we witnessed, Curtis, a lot of the guys that you had pointed to that maybe on the national draft boards weren't exactly high picks, all of a sudden became higher picks. And look, I'll give you guys both your due credit. You both called it in a lot of ways, and even some free agent signings, some undrafted guys, a guy like Keith Price. Rick, you said on this podcast, hey, wouldn't be shocked if you saw him play for the Seahawks. But what is it about the perception right now of the Pac-12 conference that maybe a lot of our guys aren't getting their due credit?
Well, I think, number one, you know, we got to consider our location. You know, a lot of football is on the East Coast and in the South, and by the time the Pac-12 is on, especially that 7 o'clock game, no one's watching. And so you have a bunch of scouts out there who have to watch a bunch of tape, and you know, they're going to go by, they're going to ask questions, they're going to figure out who's the hot guy, and maybe they may watch one or two games and give their analysis on what they think or their breakdown. And I just think that when it comes to the Pac-12, we're just a product of our location. You can't get the game.
And time zone.
Definitely time zone. When you look at the overall picture, I just remember when I was in the locker room in the NFL, you know, at that time they were talking about the Pac-10 was USC +9. So the respect level is still not there, I think. I think at some point we need to make more noise, and thank God for the Pac-12 networks where we can actually start talking about these guys, because, I mean, when it came to Dayon Buchanan, you know, I was like, you know, his cheerleader, I would say, for the draft. I thought he was just as good as Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and Calvin Pryor at the safety position, but they had him the third-ranked safety. Some had him fourth behind Jimmy Ward out of Northern Illinois, and I just kept banging it out that this guy is the best safety in the draft, and all of a sudden, you know, you see him go to Arizona, which I thought was a really great fit for him.
It's an interesting thing that this draft, the draft in 2014 is a much different draft than, Curtis, you were drafted in, and certainly back in the 80s when I was still playing football. The scrutiny that is made by the talking heads is, you know, unparalleled. And I think people are a little bit afraid to get out there and take a stand on people that aren't the household names. How much did we hear about Johnny Manziel? Certainly stands were taken on him. But for the most part, if you I couldn't but not believe the furor that was created over Anthony Barr's selection at number 9 to Minnesota. How many people had negative takes on Anthony Barr? And I'll guarantee you that there are two of those people that watched a complete game of Anthony Barr.
Mm-hmm.
Not two. That stayed up and watched Anthony Barr play a full game. Knew that he started as a running back. Knew the entire story of Anthony Barr. And to me, those are the kind of things that until the Pac-12 gets its just due with respect to the national scene. I go back to the state of California has more players in the NFL than any other state in the country. And yet all we hear about is the SEC.
SEC, man.
We talked to Mike when we looked at during signing day, how many of the ESPN's top 150 were from the
East Coast,
geographic footprint of the SEC. Yeah. And yet, the California kids are the ones that are populating the NFL more than anybody else. They don't always get there as the sexy first rounder, not like our friend sitting over here to my right.
The exception to
but,
the rule.
But the Richard Shermans, there are lots of them.
Yeah.
Not just Richard, and congratulations to Richard and his new deal with the Seahawks. Deserved.
He just got more money in his contract in this year than I got in my whole career. Double that.
Yeah, but the point I'm making is there are lots of those kind of kids from that grew up not so far away from where you grew up mm-hmm. that are just waiting for their chances.
Yep.
And they may not get there with the sexy first pick, Brandon Browner, another kid who grew up in I think L.A. and went to Oregon State as a corner. Was another guy that was a Seahawk. That you know, this is a fertile recruiting area, and I think the NFL has fallen a little bit prey to watching all that attention that goes to the SEC, and certainly the SEC is deserving of it. But I think we're overlooked. I make the point that it's a little bit like I remember in recruiting. You'd go get it. These kids in Texas were so polished and had played so much football because football's, frankly, more emphasized in the state of Texas than in the state of California. And yet, when you got them, there wasn't as much upside. They weren't going to develop the same as a guy who's now for the first time eating 3 square meals a day, a guy who's working out, playing just the one sport all the time, getting the coaching. Those guys blossom unbelievably fast, and I think that's true of the Pac-12. You're going to see a lot of these kids who didn't get drafted still make teams.
And I think it's important to note that perception matters, and this is a story that you're not going to hear on Pac-12 Football Weekly. Actually, the season finale, Wednesday nights, 7 p.m.
For those of you who are listening, Mike Yam has a new toy.
I have a new toy. I get to actually play a lot of the music.
It's an iPad, and it's got all these buttons on it. And it allows him to do whatever he wants. So when you hear something that completely sounds out of character and inappropriately placed into the show, just know that that's Yam playing DJ.
As Candace Coutts, who's one of the producers of this show, told me, she said, Mike, you have control. And as I responded, that's the first time a woman has ever told me that. So we'll just go with it. But
you should call your mom on that issue.
Here's the point. Perception does matter. And Seaway, I don't think we're going to be able to tell this story later this evening on tonight's Football Weekly, 7 p.m.
Pick Pacific. It up.
Multiple re-airs. I'll do your part. But Paul Richardson is a guy that nationally wasn't necessarily talked about, but yet on the NFL Network, you had him up very high on your specific draft board, and you started hearing from folks in Seattle, correct?
Well, it's funny because after the first day, the next day we had a 3-hour show, and the topic was who was the top guy on my board, and I had Paul Richardson as my top guy, and no one understood why. The beauty of being able to watch film is you can compare a guy and put his game to the next level, take his game to the next level and put him on an NFL team. And I just thought two teams really fit his style. And that was Philly and Seattle based on what Seattle had. And that morning, I talked about his fit being in Seattle, considering they like to run the football. And although Paul wasn't one of the top guys on most people's boards, I saw him as a guy that if you played man-to-man outside on the island, he can run by anybody on the field. And so a perfect fit was a running game where he will get that chance to get man-to-man coverage. And I thought Seattle was a good fit. It was funny because John Snyder, the GM, and a couple of his scouts were watching NFL Network And one of the scouts ran into his office and said, look, man, you know, someone knows about Paul Richardson outside of us, because no one was talking about Paul Richardson. Of course, all the attention was on Marquise Lee and the rest of the wide receivers. And all of a sudden, they said, look, we need to not play around with this pick and go on to grab him, because they were trying to trade back thinking no one knew about him. But that just goes to show you again, another really talented wide receiver who really got overlooked. And when you start talking about Colorado, even in the Pac-12, that's not one of the hot teams. So no one's really paying attention to that football team. But yet and still, you have a second round wide receiver in a class of wide receivers that we haven't seen in a long time. I mean, if there was 10 wide receivers in that draft that could have went bottom of the first round, top of the second round, and Paul Richardson, he got picked at the top, and I was pretty excited because I think he deserved it.
One of the first Pac-12 wide receiver that was taken off the board was Brandon Cooks, who is now the newest member of the New Orleans Saints. This is what he had to say at his press conference.
You know, to be honest, the thought that was going to my mind is I had a great feeling when I saw that trade. I knew something special was coming, and I'm very excited. Because at the combine, when I had a formal interview with them, you know, I saw the expression on their face when I walked out the door, and I had that vibe. So, you know, I definitely felt that since the combine. And it happened. So I guess I went with my gut feeling that was the right thing to do. You know, I ran your basic routes, but I also caught your screens, and I ran the fly sweep. So to come from an offense like that is very helpful, because I'm going to be kind of familiar to the terminology, but I'll be extremely familiar with the concepts.
No, it was great to talk to Brandon Cooks on Pac-12 Football Weekly Wednesday nights during the season, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Multiple rears.
And one of the interesting things about Cooks is he's got this great personality. That's him on the conference call. He didn't necessarily feel that out. You had an opportunity before the NFL draft to speak with Brandon Cooks. Both of you guys have loved him. What is it in your mind that's going to make him successful?
I think New Orleans went and took the bait, so to speak, when traded up in front of Philadelphia, because I think they knew that Chip Kelly would know all about Brandon Cooks. I think they love Brandon Cooks, not just because of the great athleticism and the numbers that he rang up, but because of how well he thinks when he's out there on the field. He's a very cerebral receiver, knows how to shape routes, knows how to work windows. And for a guy like Drew Brees, and remember now, Drew Brees is a 6-foot-tall quarterback, despite all those great numbers. So he throws to windows. He doesn't necessarily see everything that he's throwing to. So he has to rely on great, intelligent receivers that can find their way into the same window that he's seeing. And I think they trust Brandon Cooks in that regard. Sounds to me like he had a great visit when he was there. I guarantee they had him on the board, and Brandon was able to articulate everything that they needed to hear with respect to understanding coverages, understanding shaping routes, and I think Drew Brees has got himself a gem.
You know, when I met Brandon on the set, I mean, he just came off very, very polished in terms of being a professional already, the way he approaches the game. Just talking to him off set, I mean, he understood that, you know, this is a job. And you could tell he had that mentality at Oregon State, the way he played. Coach just hit on it. It's more than just being an athlete. You have to be a guy that can go in the classroom and understand that you're going to get double covered. And how will you be able to get loose against double coverage? And it's not just athletic ability. You have to be able to go and study film and see where's a weakness. They may try this and may try that. It's one thing to go do it and watch it, but then to still be successful. And guys, you know, last year I kept saying, I love Brandon Cooks, but will somebody stop him? And no one could stop him. No one could stop him. And that goes to show how much he actually put the time in to study, you know. And When you put him at the next level, that's the key to this game at the next level, is being able to go in and study film. How can you get an edge? What can you see? Tendencies, weaknesses, strengths, and things of that nature. And I think Brandon playing in Sean Payton's offense, he's going to be able to bring that right away. You talk about a young man who can play inside the slot. The way Denver, they use Wes Welker, and the way he was used in New England, that's not the way the Saints offense, that's not how they play. But Brandon Cooks is definitely a guy that you can put in the slot and use that way, and I wouldn't be surprised if they threw to him more in the slot. I love him playing outside because he's a young man who can run all the routes. He can run the comeback. He ran pro routes in Oregon State. So he will definitely be able to step in that offense. And then you line, then you pair him on the same side as a Jimmy Graham, and you put man-to-man coverage against Brandon Cooks, who is small but also fast and strong. I mean, I love the pick. Brandon Cooks going to the Saints.
And by far and away, I think, Curtis, you'd agree with this, had the most sophisticated route tree. As you looked at the tape of all the receivers, and there were some great ones in this conference, had the most sophisticated route tree of any of them. He ran every route that the NFL needed him to run to know that he'd be able to be successful at that level, and brings that great acumen to understanding how coverages play. I think it's a natural.
Well, yeah. Sorry, go on.
No, you keep in mind, he had a number one receiver in Marcus Wheaton 2 years ago.
Yep.
And he put up
1,000-yard receivers the same year.
Right.
They both had
1,000. He put up big numbers. So you knew coming back this year, he was going to be a target. And he had his best season being a target. I was a number two receiver to Jeff Graham in Chicago. And I put up big numbers, 12 touchdowns. And all of a sudden, Jeff Graham left. And now the spotlight was on me. And I know how hard it is when the spotlight is on you and you go from being single covered to playing against cover three, playing against cover man, to now having two guys on you at all time, whether it be a linebacker sneaking up under you, to a safety over top of you. You have to be able to recognize those things. And I can say, Brandon being able to come back and have the season that he had was truly remarkable.
I think there's a couple similarities here in this regard. Last season's Biletnikoff winner, award winner, Brandon Cooks, 2 seasons ago. You go to Marquise Lee. You just mentioned Marcus Wheaton, who was on the opposite side of a guy like Brandon Cooks. Marquise Lee, you've talked about it before, and what he has looked at with Robert Woods and the game that Robert Woods had at USC. Marquise Lee, though, was the guy that went into the second round, and here's what he had to say about that.
I mean, it's always tough, you know, because everybody who sits in that room wants to get drafted as early as possible. But, I mean, you know, at that time, you think about it as like, oh, yeah, I want to get drafted. But then, you know, when you come in the next day and you really think about it, at the end of the day, you get to realize, like, you know, like at the end of the day, you know, you still got the opportunity to make it to the league and, you know, improve a point.
He's going to have that opportunity. Saw some ESPN did this Draft Academy show where you get an opportunity to hear from a lot. They follow the stories of some of the top guys. Marquise Lee was one of those guys. Give me your assessment on both you guys on Lee, and why is it just the knee? Is that the reason why he was a second rounder in this year's draft and not a first round pick?
I'm sure that had to do with it. Some of the people that I talked to questioned durability. I don't question it. I think this guy is a bona fide big time player. Certainly there's some refining to do. I thought there was some refining to do when I watched the high school tape. But in terms of an explosive athlete and a guy who loves to play, I think this is an exciting pick for Jacksonville. My buddy Jed Fish is the offensive coordinator there. He and I work together in Baltimore. And I know Jed's ecstatic. They get Bortles in the first round, who they picked they deemed to be the top quarterback in the draft. They needed a quarterback in desperate fashion. And now they get a top wide receiver who a year ago, before the injuries and the checkered 2013 season, would have been easily the top guy receiver in the draft. Sammy Watkins was coming off a tough year. Mike Adams had not yet burst onto the – or Mike Evans had not yet burst onto the scene. I mean, this guy would have been the top guy. As you mentioned, he was the Biletnikoff Award winner and was – certain to be that guy for USC. They just didn't have a quarterback, and it just didn't happen, trying to push square pegs into round holes. Tough year for Marquise. But sometimes, as you just heard, it's about getting there, and maybe this will make him a little bit more hungry to reestablish himself as one of the top receivers.
Well, you know, I heard nothing about the knee. It was more about his speed. You know, Marquise, I think when you look at him on film, he looks a little bigger than he really is. He looks a little faster than he really is. And so when he went to the combine, he didn't run the 4.3, 4.4 that everyone thought he would. And I think that rose a huge question mark in some of the team's eyes. And then he didn't run in his pro day. And a lot of people questioned, why didn't he run at his pro day? Because the one thing that you knew, or you thought you knew about Marquise, is he was fast. And 4.5 at 5'10", 5'11", is not the same guy that they thought they saw on tape. And here's the thing. When you look at this receiver class and you start talking about Brandon Cooks, 4'3", you know, can run all the routes. Odell Beckham, 4.3, 4.4, pro-style offense. You start looking at all these receivers who ran 4.5. it was a lot to choose from. It wasn't as simple as, okay, Marquise is the guy. So I think Marquise didn't do himself a favor by not running at his pro day. I think if he could have went out there and ran at his pro day and showed that he was a lot faster,
that would have helped.
That would have helped a lot.
Because
that was the X factor, I think, is the 4-5.
There are some, and I want to get you guys on some of the storylines that stood out offensively, but I'd be remiss. I know both you guys mentioned Anthony Barr, but Dan Buchanan is a guy that, Seaway, you were very high on. You talked about him before. This is what he had to say at his draft day presser.
I went on about 20 total visits, you know, and I told my mom, this is the team that I pointed out. And because when I was at dinner, you know, they weren't not only talking to me as a player, but as a person. They cared about me on the field, but they also cared about what I did off the field. And we were just talking about life. You know, it wasn't just football. It wasn't just what can't you do? What can you do? What can you do for our team? You know, things like that. It was, what kind of person are you? How do you fit into this organization? You know, and I felt the same way, you know, and I had that same vibe. So, you know, it meant a lot.
Well, when you're vibing and you're feeling it, it's a good thing. And Dan Buchanan he has a reputation of being a big hitter. We've talked to him multiple times on Pac-12 Football Weekly, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Multiple re-airs.
Yes, definitely multiple re-airs. And he is a humble kid. The story behind him, both parents, military, dad part of the Marines, mom part of the Navy, and yet he's talked about in the past, you know, it wasn't necessarily this really strict household that he grew up on or grew up in. He said, hey, this is, you know, I had to go and work for things, though. And maybe it was strict, and maybe that's all Dan Buchanan knows, and maybe he's just trying to change the perception that people might have of military families with both parents who are serving this country. But Seaway, you've been raving about this guy all season long, and you thought he was a first-round pick, and yet most of the draft, the mock drafts that people were putting out there, had him as a second or a third-round pick. What did you see that had Arizona taking him in the first round?
Well, when you look at Dayon Buchanan, I mean, I measured him up against the guys that they say were going in the first round, Ha Ha Clinton Dix and Calvin Pryor out of Louisville, and I said, this Buchanan is just as good or better, and he's probably the most versatile safety in the draft, considering he can play free if you need him to. I think he's more of a strong safety, but he definitely can play the free safety. And when you look at all the measurables, if that's what you want to call it, and his testing, he graded out above, you know, Ha Ha Clinton Dix and Calvin Pryor. When you look at the numbers he put up in college, his productivity was better than any safety in college football. He played 4 years at Washington State, so you knew he was mature and understood the game, and you saw a definite progression in terms of his numbers in tackles and his numbers in interceptions and his style. I mean, he was the fastest guy, fastest safety, the hardest hitting safety, had the most interceptions, and when you look at the fit in Arizona, when you talk about Antonio Cromartie at one corner, Patrick Peterson at the other corner, and then you got the Honey Badger at free, you slide Buchanan into that secondary, and you're talking about a division with probably the best secondaries in football. He adds that element to the Cardinals, man. And again, I just thought that he was just as good or better than any safety in the draft.
All you need to know about Dayon Buchanan is he led the Pac-12 in tackles. I mean, think about the defensive names in this conference. And Dayon Buchanan at Washington State leads the conference in tackles. Curtis, you hit the nail right on the head when you said he's the most physical guy. I mean, when they put in the new rules about targeting and so forth, Dayon Buchanan had to back off because he was lethal. He was a headhunter. And I don't mean it in a
negative way.
Negative way. That was a guy who you better have your head on a swivel when you're going across the middle with him back there. But this is a unbelievably talented football player, a guy that had to go through some really rough times at Washington State with respect to the success of the team, rose to be their leader, and to me, this is one of the great stories, and I pat Arizona on the shoulder and say great job for finding a way to get him at the 27th pick. That guy's a really good football player. And again, I think falling a little bit prey to late night television that a lot of those folks aren't paying enough attention. He got a lot of heads turned when he got to the Senior Bowl, but again, to stay up there and say Deion Buchanan's better than Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, who comes from the Nick Saban defense, you got to really know what you're talking about. And frankly, I don't know that there are enough people that really do know what they're talking about. I think this guy's special.
You guys talked about late-night television on the West Coast with the football. You said that's maybe a reason why the perception on Anthony Barr was what it was. Very critical, a lot of the national experts, on the fact that Minnesota took him. He, in fact, was the first Pac-12 player that was drafted.
I wasn't too sure. You know, I knew when I was here on my visit a couple weeks ago, there was some level of comfort. I felt like I had a pretty good trip, and I thought my meetings went well. And so I felt if I were to become a Viking that I would it'd be a great fit for me. But at the end of the day, I still wasn't too sure exactly where I was going to go.
Seaway, you were a first-round pick. Rick, you've been in the NFL organizations. Anthony Barr's a guy that you were able to recruit to bring to UCLA. Guys, explain to me why in the world anyone would be down on a guy like Anthony Barr in the first round, specifically with that ninth pick, because the perception for 2 days as I'm watching coverage of the NFL draft, the so-called experts continue to hammer Minnesota for taking him ninth overall. Why?
You know, I don't know. Again, I maybe experience, but 23 sacks in your first 2 years of ever playing a position, that's pretty impressive to me. I think, you know, when you look at Anthony Barr's upside, you know, Anthony didn't even know what he was doing out there, and that's a credit to him to be able to go out there and get 23 sacks in 2 years and still not really have that much experience at the position. When I look at him and I compared him to Khalil Mack and Jadeveon Clowney, especially Khalil Mack for that matter, he's bigger than Khalil Mack, he's faster than Khalil Mack, and he has more sacks than Khalil Mack when you consider the time that they've played the position. I think that I had both of those guys.
And played at a higher level.
And played at a higher level. I mean, when you go to Khalil Mack's tape, you put the Ohio State game on, and he was very impressive in that game. Take nothing away from the kid. He was very impressive. The spotlight automatically shifted to Mack, and all of a sudden, you watched him throughout the rest of the year, and you look at the level of competition that he had to play against. And then you put Anthony Barr in that same situation. You know, we talked about it a lot, okay, with Jadeveon Clowney when they were comparing Mack and Clowney. Well, I always threw Anthony Barr in there because I said, can you imagine Anthony Barr playing in the Mack? Can you imagine Jadeveon Clowney playing in the Mack? Now you put a Khalil Mack in the Pac-12 and you in the SEC. You may see different results. Like, again, not taking nothing away from Khalil Mack. I think he's an excellent player. But Anthony Barr, I just think he flew up under the radar because of his experience. At the same time, I just think that people are not really – and, Coach, you hit on it. I really believe that people are not putting enough time in watching Pac-12 football. Not just watching the game, but sitting there and watching the tape and really analyzing these players.
If you just trust your eyes will tell you that guy's not exerting enough energy. Some of the knocks on Anthony was he takes plays off or things of that nature. And to me, one of the great gifts the really athletic people have is the ability to look like it's effortless. I remember going to the combine as a member of the Baltimore Ravens staff and watching Calvin Johnson run his 40. And you have to imagine, I think at the time it was the RCA Dome in Indianapolis, and there's a bunch of coaches who are drinking their second cup of coffee, you know, kibitzing, talking, you know, shop because they see old buddies and so forth. And guys are running 40s because you're going to get all the information anyway. And people are taking casual views of all this. And all of a sudden, Calvin Johnson, the guy comes out. Calvin Johnson gets out of the blocks. First of all, he looks like a specimen. He's 6'5", 235 pounds. Comes out running. He never looked like he even started to go fast. And all of a sudden they announce 4.33 or 4.35 or whatever it was. Everybody's holding their watches going, are you kidding me? But if you didn't put a watch on it and you just saw him do that, you would have said, yeah, average speed. You know, just, I mean, never looked fast, but the stride. And I go back to watching Anthony Barr play. He never looks like he's really exerting energy. And yet, he's around guys, and his body's 3 and 4 feet off the ground for a 6'5 frame, and he's laying out, you know, to make plays in the backfield that are 6 yards away from the point where he leaves the ground. That's superhuman stuff. And the guy that I talked to from the Minnesota Vikings, an old pal of mine, he said the times on him in some of these three-cone drills and the shuttle and so forth, are like better than some of the DBs that were first rounders. And is this guy that kind of athlete? And I said, he is. He's special. He's that kind of a freak athlete. He's not over the top flamboyant. He's not, you know, a look at me guy. He's just really, really talented and really, really explosive. And time will tell, but I think the Minnesota Vikings hit a home run with this one.
Curtis, I know you got to get running, but is there a player, offense, defense, late round pick, a guy that maybe wasn't signed and, or excuse me, wasn't drafted but was signed that you think really can make an impact, or storyline that was out there? Because I mean, you were in the thick of things for 2 days there with the NFL Network, seeing all these guys continue to get taken off the board.
The funny thing about the NFL and free agents coming in is that you just never know what the coaches are thinking. I've been in that situation where we've brought in free agents, and for whatever reason that they were brought in, you can see the talent there. You can see that they can play. You can see that they should make the team or be a member of the team, and all of a sudden, they're not on the team. It really comes down to, you know, what the depth is like on the football team. And that's, for me, playing in the league, it's hard for me to say what guy will, because you never know what's going on in the coach's head. The thing I do like is Grimble, Xavier Grimble going to New York. I think he has a great opportunity there. I'm going to tell you a storyline that I do like that no one's talking about. I like Shaq Evans going to the Jets.
Because I think it's a great place for Shaq.
It's a great place. They need a wide receiver. I thought they were going to go wide receiver in the first couple of rounds. They end up drafting Shaq. Now, Shaq's a guy that can go in there and I believe can play right away. And he will be a great number two next to Eric Decker. So that's a situation that I really, really like that no one's talking about.
I think that's a great one. I think Jordan Zumwalt to Pittsburgh is also a great fit for Jordan. Jordan can play both inside and outside. Dick Duran is, you know, one of the best defensive coordinators in all of football, has great ways to utilize linebackers in lots of different ways. They're all part of the nickel package. They become the defensive ends in the nickel, and Jordan certainly has some pass rushing capability. I think he's going to fit in with the Steeler defense right away. I really do.
Seaway, I know you're a TV guy. Rick and I, the three of us have had conversations. Are you a Game of Thrones guy? No?
Not a Game of Thrones.
You don't watch Game of Thrones?
Yam likes him because of the short guy in there.
Olivia Pope.
I know you're a big Scandal guy.
She's the only one can get me to the TV right now.
I actually like Game of Thrones because of Khaleesi. Okay, let's just throw that out there. Are you a Mad Men person?
Do you follow Khaleesi on Twitter?
No, that's actually a good call. I should probably get on that one.
I'm all about Olivia.
You got to be watching something else.
Paw Patrol.
No.
You don't know anything about Paw
Patrol,
do you?
No.
It's cartoons, kids.
That's
when you have kids, trust me, the TV is either off or it's on cartoons. Or left, you know, Olivia's on and I have a date with her.
God, that's disappointing. You know who was just in our, who stopped by yesterday?
Who?
And I'm actually a little ticked at you because I just found out.
A little? You spend your life ticked at me.
But I feel like I get a lot of stories from you, and I never heard this. But Mike Montgomery, the former Cal coach who just retired, he was actually by our studios. We were hanging out. I don't even know how it happened, but do you know that he is a diehard fan of The Voice? We spent like 15, 20 minutes talking about the show. I asked him, who do you like better, Shakira or Christina? And I told him that I feel like when Christina's on, I'm a Christina guy. And then Shakira's on, and you know what? I'm
Shakira's
a Shakira guy.
Shakira's stolen your heart, though, huh?
Man.
The Voice?
Did you just say
The Voice?
Yeah,
man.
It's embarrassing.
Do you watch
As
it, too?
As Flavor Flav would say, wow.
Well, here's why I'm a little upset, because Mike Montgomery told me, and I didn't know this about you. Did you live with Steve Lavin? He said that you were roommates with him for a little bit.
Lav and I were not roommates, but okay. Bob Houck was Lav's roommate.
He said the three of you guys lived together.
We hung out together.
Oh,
those
okay.
two actually lived together. We ran around a little bit, but we did not live together.
Well, that's
Rich, yeah. He just spent the night every now and then.
Yeah. So the story goes. Seaway, it was great to have you by. I know you're going to be joining us a little bit later. Pac-12 Football Week, Wednesday nights. Season finale.
Multiple re-airs.
Oh, man.
I was leaning on the table on that one. Damn! That's my bad.
This DJ Yam's got to stop.
I've been pretty on point until that last one. I was a little late on the trigger.
With the 494th pick of the NFL draft, the Chicago Bears select DJ Yam.
Going to Disney. Going to Disney.
DJ Yammy Yam.
Just hitting buttons. It doesn't matter. Rick's just going to fire off. We'll do a little mad.
DJ Yam.
Oh, go Shakira.
DJ Yam.
Will you watch the voice when Pharrell is one of the
dresses?
Get a little Nas on there, a little Jay-Z on there or something,
that's,
man.
Which wouldn't be too bad. Seaway, looking forward to doing the show with you a little bit.
Looking forward to the finale, fellas.
A couple of house cleaning issues as Seaway hits the road with us. You were in New York. Spent some time. I know you were hanging out with some of the first rounders. When I tell you my disappointment was immense, it was, because I really legitimately thought
you were
going to win. My goal for the upcoming season,
misguided,
I told you this.
But you're kind.
I texted you this after we found out that the process for winning an Emmy is rigged because you didn't win, that I told you that the goal was going to be next year to make sure you're back in New York, which is going to be a lock, but you're going to win it. So I'm going to craft in this offseason. You know, the coaches and everyone, they get ready to do.
I say you need to go to New York next year. I'll stay back and be in your fan club. How's that?
Look, you actually just did what we call here at the Pac-12 Networks a lunch and learn. And Kirk Reynolds, who is one of our big wigs here, had asked me. He said, look, Rick's going to do the math of football. Can you just sort of set it up and then get out of the way? And I said, oh, it's like doing a regular show with Rick. Just set him up and then just get out of the way and let him do his thing. But how was the experience like? Because I think for some, I would think for you, it's got to be a pretty cool thing because you've had so much success on a football level. And now all of a sudden you're in this sort of second career and you know, no one would be happier if you left the Pac-12 network specifically to go and play head coach again for another team. But this is a second career of sorts. And immediately within 2 years, you're up for an Emmy.
Well, let me say this. For those of you who have never been to New York, you need to put that on your bucket list. It's a fabulous place to visit. All you do is look skyward and see how tall these buildings are. My wife and I went down to Broadway and took in a couple of shows. I mean, just saw Idina Menzel perform. She, not Kazim or whatever John Travolta called her, but what an unbelievable voice. I can't tell you much about the play. I'm sure it was great, but her singing was off the charts. It was worth every penny just to hear her sing in that kind of environment. We cruised around, did some shopping. I mean, when you walk through Central Park, it's a historic.
And you weren't far from there.
No, we were real close. So anyway, it was a phenomenal, phenomenal trip. The Emmys themselves were really well done. It was neat to see that most of those nominated were there. I mean,
I can't
perceived
imagine
as
not,
a really important thing that all the honor. The mucky mucks were there, you know, in terms of the networks and everybody kind of sits in their teams, you know, from
it's like high school.
NBC Sunday Night Football won a lot. Michelle Tafoya won and Chris Collinsworth won. But it was neat to see their team celebrate.
Do you
know?
Talk to the like who else was? I know Collinsworth was nominated with you.
I knew we were in. I knew it. Things weren't looking good when we were in the back row.
Oh God!
Usually they put people that are going to win up there closer to the stage. That wasn't a good sign. Especially when like the first eight people that won were like
second
right
row.
There. I said this doesn't look good. But the worst part about the deal, actually, there were two things that were. I wished hadn't happened. Number one, that in my category, they said, there's a tie. There are going to be two winners in this category. Because I went there with very little in the way of expectations of winning.
You kept saying that. And I kept trying to build you up.
I'm thrilled that I'm there and recognized and you put your picture up there amidst the likes of Michael Strahan and Chris Collinsworth. That's all good stuff.
I told you before you left here, I said, I don't want to hear that. You go like you were coaching a game. You're going to
Win. Listen, it wasn't like there was a lot of prep.
Yeah.
You just go there and you enjoy it. But then they say there's two. And I'm going, could it be? You know, they just
feeling
have
good. You get a little Harold Reynolds. Stop for a second.
Harold Reynolds wins the first one.
Yeah.
And Harold and I knew each other in Seattle, and I'm a big fan, especially as he's rebuilt himself and couldn't be a nicer guy.
Yeah.
So very happy. And I'm going, this would be too good to be true.
Yeah.
And it was. It was too good to be true because, and the sad part about having a second guy, Tom Verducci, who I'm sure is well deserving. I didn't see a lot of Tom's work, but I'm sure he's great. He wins the second one. But now you can't say you finished second.
Yeah.
See, you have to now go down to say you finished third. And the other thing that I didn't realize was going to happen, I should have braced myself more for this. When you're a head football coach, the people that are immediately around you, your family, your kids, your those who came on your tickets, they go into this, oh, I'm so sorry. It's almost like someone died.
Yeah.
You know, they put their arm, oh, you'll be okay. And my mom and dad, who've traveled back there, they were in this mode, like, oh, gosh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, relax. We're here. We're in New York. We're taking in the pomp, the circumstance. This is all good stuff. Relax. But I couldn't get them out of this funk. That was hard. So I'm going to have a
there
better
was a
plan
funk around ever Pac-12 next year. You better have a better plan.
And the guys from the Pac-12 who were nominated for their technical advancement,
yeah.
It was the first one. I mean, we weren't hardly even in our seats.
That's what I wanted to bring up to you.
We weren't hardly even in our seats, and all of a sudden, we didn't win. And the team that won it, and I'm not suggesting they weren't deserving, but the technical advance that they did was to see if a soccer ball crossed the goal line.
Yeah.
That's tennis.
Yeah.
We see that every day.
Exactly. We've been seeing it for years.
What we did was hugely beneficial, not just for us, but for anybody who's following suit. And to me, that was disappointing because those folks were so excited, to be there. And they didn't even hardly get to sit down, have that moment
and already know. Yeah.
It's done.
Is it too much anticipation? This is the one thing before we get to the segment that's sweeping the nation.
Sweeping the nation.
Because your category for best studio analyst was towards the end. I think you were one of the last categories that was in
26th of 34. And you know what else bothers you? Jim Lampley comes up there. And by the way, another thing that is when you see the trophies, the trophies are really cool.
I know. I've seen, you know,
I mean, Lydia
Murphy Steffens, who is
looks like
our president,
put some flowers
here
in it. And
she's got
move
a ton
it over
of them.
This is a really cool looking trophy.
Yeah, yeah.
Jim Lampley comes up there at the end and says, oh, by the way, we're not using all these. I'm going, maybe I just go borrow
just,
one. I'll bring it
one
back.
Yeah. Just pretend we won one. No one knows.
Can I rent that for the evening? No, people will stop treating me like somebody died in the family.
Yeah, it's one of those deals. But as I mentioned, congratulations, because in all seriousness, and I know we've joked about it before. But
great fun.
Yes.
Great fun to be in New York. Very privileged to be there.
I didn't know you guys were going to see some shows, so I have a couple show recommendations next time you're in New York.
Well, I appreciate that. But we had a blast and lived to tell about it.
It's time for Rick Neuheisel's Gridiron Lullaby.
Yes, 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 yes. It is the segment sweeping the nation. Gridiron Lullaby. This is the time of the podcast.
True stories.
When
they're
Rick,
all true stories.
They are true, and Rick enlightens us with the story. Maybe it's topical. Maybe it has something to do with the draft. Maybe it doesn't. Rick, what do you have for us this week?
Well, we're staying on our draft deal. Well, did you see the story about Sammy Watkins? Buffalo went way up to select him, trading with Cleveland, going all the way up to the number 4 pick, giving up their next year's first round because he's a dynamic player, wide receiver from Clemson. But did you see what he did after the draft? He went and saw Jim Kelly in the hospital. Jim Kelly, for those of you who don't know, is had a recurrence, a return of some cancer.
It's his third time?
I don't know the number, but he's fighting a very valiant fight. But Sammy Watkins, who now is a member of the Buffalo Bills, goes and sees Jim Kelly. And to me, I have great memories of Jim Kelly. Jim Kelly and I both started in the USFL. He was the quarterback of the Houston Gamblers, and I was the quarterback of the San Antonio Gunslingers. And Kelly was phenomenal in the run and shoot. June Jones was the coordinator. Mouse Davis was there. They found ways to go up and down the field, and it was surgery, so to speak. And so it brings to mind my days in the USFL. right? I was drafted, actually, in the USFL in the second round back in 1984. And as the story goes, the guys who were doing the draft for San Antonio overheard those who were doing the draft for Jacksonville say that they were going to get Neuheisel in the second round. So he got on the phone. Billy Schott got on the phone and said, hey, they're going to draft Neuheisel in the second. Should we? So they drafted me in front, which was really fortuitous for me because San Antonio would be the one franchise that wouldn't pay. So so you get signed to this to the team that won't pay you. I think that's really good luck. So I end up starting both years in San Antonio, okay? And we go 7-11 in year one and 5-13 in year two. Ours was the lowest budget in the league. Like I said, it was every now and then when they decided to pay. One time the owner came and said, hey, look, we've got your checks. You guys are all set. Everybody's excited. Woo-hoo, we got checks. He goes, now you just have to go to Lavernia to get them. Where's Lavernia? This is before Google Maps.
Yeah, break out the iPhone.
Everybody's busting out their Shell service station maps to find Lavernia and this a dot on the Texas map. And it was probably an hour and a half away from San Antonio. It was literally, Mike, a race because everybody knew from past experience, if you didn't get there in the first 30 checks, 50 of us, you weren't getting paid. There was only enough to pay the first half to maybe 60% of you.
Wow.
And so it was a gumball rally to Lavernia. But one of my memories in the USFL, despite the lack of payments on a regular basis, was Herschel Walker was a dominant performer, okay? And at one point had won four straight. Jim Kelly had, a bunch, but Herschel Walker had won four straight players of the week in the USFL. Who upended that streak of four in a row? I'll tell you who.
Yep.
It was yours truly, Rick Neuheisel, against Jim Kelly in Alamo Stadium in front of probably 14,000 people.
Wow.
Full house
for those of us
in Alamo. And I threw four touchdown passes, threw for over 400 yards. Kelly had probably the same numbers on the other side. We end up losing the game by a touchdown, but it was one of the most entertaining games during the run of the Gunslingers. And I get named, just because I think they felt so sorry for our poor little franchise, I get named Player of the Week. Miller Lite's Player of the Week.
Still remember the sponsor. Love it.
So we're going to play Tampa Bay. Steve Spurrier's Tampa Bay Bandits are coming to town the next week. And they're going to make the presentation at halftime. Well, to accept the award, they asked, do I want my dad to come in? I said, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, dad, you're going to get this award at halftime, player of the week. You know, your kid, he made it to the show, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I throw two picks in the first half of that game.
He got booed.
They boo my dad.
Oh, man.
I think that'll be the title of my book. They even booed my dad.
Yeah.
My dad, at the end of the game, comes up to me, says, hey, next time you win something, get it yourself.
Was there in terms of booing goes, because I know you've been booed by pretty much everyone in the Pac-12 conference.
Yeah, I got that going for me.
Is that the one that stings the most? Because I feel like if you're on the side, you expect it. I feel like, to me, knowing that your dad got booed after you threw two picks in the first half is pretty bad. But also going on the kiss cam,
getting
Las
booed
Bay
in the kiss
with your wife is
my wife didn't deserve that.
Yeah, I mean you do, but Sue does not. Sue's an angel.
She's an angel.
Oh man, was that the worst?
The worst booing session? God, that's a long line
for the next edition.
Can you got the out music for there?
Yeah, you want to hear the out music?
Can you give me some volume?
That's as loud as it goes.
That's poor. We got to turn that up.
You want that one louder?
Yeah. Candace, he doesn't have all the bells and whistles here.
No, well,
do it again then.
Okay, we'll do it again. Ready?
Candace can.
So really,
yam, not so.
I was going to say, so what we learned here is Candace lied to me. I really don't have total control. By the way, that has happened.
That actually.
I am used to women telling
a comfortable situation.
Exactly, I am used to women lying to me. Boy, that hits close to home there. One other note before we get out of here: Under Center, the brand new edition. of Rick Neuheisel's
special
show.
Treat tonight.
Yeah. Marcus Mariota. Did you get him in the water?
You know what? I was told under no uncertain terms by the brass here at the Pac-12, under no circumstances are we letting him into the water. Something might happen, and we would never, ever be able to look Oregon in the eyes again. And I guess in terms of the big picture, it makes sense, but gosh almighty.
Was he disappointed that he couldn't?
Yeah, he said, no, we're not going in. I said, we're not going in. I was like,
what was the?
I was like bringing an ice cream cone to you and saying, no, you don't get any.
That would be sad to me. That actually sounds pretty tasty. Can I go through a congratulations to here on the podcast?
For?
Ashley Adams.
Oh!
Our, the real star here of the Pac-12 Networks. This is my version of Gridiron Lullaby. Over the weekend, a couple of us were supposed
to... No extra volume.
Yeah, no, just keep it low. There was a few of us, we were going to go to Oyster Fest here in the Bay Area. I don't even like oysters, but I just figured, hey, it'd be a cool experience. We're all outside, you know, hanging out.
Short pants. I'm in.
And Ashley sends us. We end up not going to Oyster Fest. A couple of us are at brunch, and Ashley sends me a text message. It's her and her now lovely fiance in a picture, and she said, the quote is, so, a change of plans. And it's a close-up shot of the two of them. And I go, all right, well, I guess Ashley just ditched us. Because I was like, what does this picture even mean? Because it's so close-up. There's no context. I don't know where she went. It means nothing to me. And, you know, I just put the phone away. One of our, so Kate Rooney is with us, who is one of our good friends and works with us here on the staff.
The very savvy
yes,
Kate Rooney.
Who actually is a,
who should recognize the picture for what it was.
Exactly. And she should be on The Voice because she has a great singing voice, says, oh my God, she got engaged. So then I, of course, had to take the phone back out and she got engaged. But congratulations to the two of them. Hung out with both of them and their families this past weekend. Great families. So we wish her nothing but the best, right?
Absolutely.
That's what happens when you get married. You have a good time. It's all
someday,
it's
all right. Mike. Someday.
Someday someone will be tortured with me for a lifetime. Always appreciate everyone downloading us. I am sad to say this is our last podcast until, I guess, Media Day is the tentative game plan right now. Should I say tentative? Is that the best way to describe it? So end of July, we're going to take a little bit of time off. You, of course, you can always follow Coach on Twitter, at Coach Neuheisel. He is diligent as any person that is on Twitter about tweeting and interacting with his fans. At Mike _ Yam, I think I might be slightly better than Rick on Twitter. For no reason, just
multiple re-airs.
Just wanted to ring that bell. And once again, we do appreciate you downloading us. We've actually heard from some people that actually listen to the show, other than your family and my family. And now Curtis's family. So that's always a huge positive. And we owe, once again, at pack-12.com. And of course,
show that is sweeping the nation, Mike.
And of course, on iTunes.
This is the Pac-12 Network's football podcast.